and welcome to the Stormer Report. Today's date is the 31st of January 2016. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm pleased to welcome back to the Stormer Report Lee Rogers from the Info Stormer. How are you doing today, Lee?
Hey, Sven, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. We're not going to be able to get Andre every week. It's very hard to get a connection. And as people probably aware, last time we had to connect by phone. So maybe we'll get him back next week. But it's great that we've got you here anyway, Lee. And it's been a pretty good week for the resistance. Just from looking at the articles that are at the Info Stormer and at the Daily Stormer, some of them are shared the news reports, and there's been some really good demonstrations, some successful demonstrations. I think the most successful one has been this National Action one, where they did a flash demonstration in Newcastle with a big Hitler was right banner. They gave speeches and they just got a huge cheer from the crowd. A really lots of support there for them. And this is what happens when the Antifa don't get warned that there's going to be a demonstration. The people are behind us and they support us. And if you contrast that, the support that there was for that small demonstration there with what happened at Dover yesterday, I think you can see what I mean. In Dover, there was a cross-group demonstration against immigration. You had the Northwest Infidels there, the British Movement. It was great to see the British Movement flags flying there. Who else did you have there? You had Misanthropic Division. You had some sort of more towards the National Socialist side of things demonstrating. National Front were there. And the Antifa were warned about it beforehand because this was a demonstration that was already agreed with the police. They were going to march to a certain area. And, of course, once the Antifa learn about it, they bus people in from all over the country. It's all paid for by the Unite group and Hope Not Hate. And they even had Diane Abbott, this hideous fat slug of an MP, this negress who has no business being in our country anyway, let alone ordering people to attack the white people that are trying to protect our country from these foreign hordes that are invading. But she was there, this MP was there addressing all the Antifa. So how can the Antifa think that they are any kind of an alternative when they're being addressed directly by a member of the government? That's their leader for the occasion, is a member of the government that's ordering them about. Of course, they came
curious,
to blows.
Just curious, Sven, that's Jeremy Corbyn's friend, right? That fat gorilla-looking creature, whatever her name is.
Yeah, that's his ex-wife, if you can believe that. I mean, she's got worse over the years.
That's pretty disgusting. I don't know why anybody would want to marry something like that. But I was reading some link about how, I guess, like years ago, he was like showing off naked pictures of her. Like that's something to be proud of. I mean, that just shows that man has got some screws loose.
Nightmares. I should imagine he got with her just to get brownie points with the left, I would have thought. I often quite my inadvertent puns, but yeah, I think that he must have that kind of been the only reason. I mean, you could hardly be attracted to her. Physically, she's quite repulsive, but when you actually hear her speak, she's got the most irritating voice. But of course, what happened is that they came to blows. The Antifa attacked. Of course, the nationalists had to defend themselves. And in the way this has been reported in the media, they're trying to say that it was the nationalists that attacked these Antifa, smashed the things up. And you know, you just know that this isn't true. And the only reason there was a fight is because the Antifa turned up there. The nationalists wouldn't have caused trouble otherwise. And when you read the reports, I was looking at the Guardian report, and they said that there was a dozen or so people at the nationalist demonstration. And I watched the video, and there's at least 500 people there. So
yeah, it was a lot more than just a few. I mean, the video says it all. There was a pretty good presence there. And yeah, these Antifa groups are something else. I mean, they're essentially paid protesters that these Jewish groups pay in order to show up to disrupt any sort of nationalist type rally or any sort of wholesome resistance against this Jewish agenda. And I mean, you don't just see that in the UK. You see it pretty much everywhere around Europe. There was another thing that happened in Austria where essentially all these people showed up to protest a nationalist meeting that they had. And you had thousands of these crazy people running around blowing whistles. And it seems like it's a really common occurrence around Europe. And unfortunately, it's just something we have to deal with. And that's why I think that the National Action event that they did, in which they didn't announce anything. They just did it. I think those are a lot more effective because, as you said, it doesn't give the Antifa or the Jewish enemies any time to react or to formulate any sort of resistance. And if you look at that video, they did a really good job dealing with that obnoxious saxophone player. That was some good stuff.
Yeah, that was really good. You could see the way that he made the decision to act and then acted straight away. There was no hesitation. It was straight in there and silenced the guy because he was obviously just trying to drown them out. And there was even a woman there that was just screaming hysterically. You know, it sounded like it sounded like she was being raped. You know, I wondered if there was any Negroes there or immigrants in the crowd, and they were trying that. But that's what it sounded like. And you just thought, how can somebody just scream like that? You know, when they're not being attacked.
High-pitched voice. I think she was trying to say that they're racist, but it was hard to even understand what she was saying. It was just like some crazy reaction to the demonstration. And yeah, I mean, again, this is one of the things that Andre talks about, but you know, a lot of women are just not suited to be in politics, nor are they suited to be commenting on politics. I'm not going to say that it's true for everybody per se, but a lot of these women, it's just not in their nature to be involved with this type of thing. And I think it's really caused some sort of mental illness in some of these women who support these ridiculous causes like feminism and this other nonsense. It's really sad to see, quite frankly.
Well, they're already causing trouble in Canada. You know, the new new prime minister in Canada, this young lad, he's basically done. He said that half the cabinet has to be all women. So instead of having cabinet ministers that have got there because they're good at their job, half the cabinet are just there because they're female. And straight away, they're now demanding that the national anthem gets changed so that instead of saying patriotic sons, it says all. So try and be gender inclusive. And I don't really think we've actually had any patriotic women fighting in wars. It's always been patriotic men. So that's the first thing that they do if they do get in there where men are working is mess things up and start trying to change things. It's like the first time they had a woman bishop over here in the Church of England. Straight away, she wants to change the gender of God. She wants it to be gender neutral. She wants to change the wording in all the prayer books and the hymns so that it's female or gender neutral. They don't help at all. Then women should stay in their realm and men should stay in our realm. That's the way things should be. And that's, then we work together. But if we allow them to invade our spaces like this, then it just takes away from us and it weakens us. And you can see the influence of them in these pro-refugee groups and the pro-refugee protests, even in the refugee shelters. Whenever the BBC or RT goes to interview anyone at a refugee shelter, they're all women there, and it's all women that they speak to. And it's the women that get attacked. Just this week, we've had another woman in one of these refugee shelters, a social worker, and she was stabbed to death by the kid.
Right? Sven? Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Sweden. Yeah. And it's unbelievable. And then, of course, you had the reaction by 100 Sweden patriots who decided to come out and protest the madness by going after these invaders that are causing trouble in their land. They went to, I think it was the central station in Stockholm, and they retaliated against all of these Muslims and these hordes that have come in and have disrupted their society. I don't blame them. It's about time that they've stood up and done something. I mean, what's it going to take? I mean, you got these alleged refugees, they're really invaders, and they're killing your women now. They're sexually assaulting your women. I mean, something has to be done. The police aren't doing anything. So, I mean, this is just a natural reaction. I'm just surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
Well, this is another inspiring event that happened this week. It was the hundreds of people in Stockholm that were giving out leaflets. But that's been misreported as well. There's only one witness that says that they were attacking foreigners. And yet all the news outlets have reported that there were 100 masked men that started attacking foreigners. And yet there's only one witness to say that. There are other witnesses that are saying that they were just handing out leaflets. Handing out these leaflets that were saying enough is enough, something needs to be done about this. But it was still very inspiring to see that all these people had turned out just to have a presence there at the Stockholm train station, because that's now a no-go area. The police have said we can't keep order here at the Stockholm train station. There are Moroccan street children running around mugging people, robbing them, groping the women, and they're just unable to keep order. And actually in Sweden itself now, it's been released that for the last couple of months, any immigrant crimes have had a code slapped on them. This is called a code R291, which means that this cannot be reported to the public. The public aren't supposed to be told about this. It's not just crimes that happen with the immigrants who carried out, but any crimes that happen around the refugee centres as well have all been hidden from the public. And in the actual centres themselves, they had 5,000 incidents last year. In Sweden, this has just come out. So that's 5,000 incidents that the Swedish authorities covered up. So they can't, not only are they bringing these hordes in to replace us, that are violently replacing us and attacking us, but they're actually covering up their crimes as well. And the statistics from Holland, 8,000 incidents at the invader holding pens, 8,000 of them. And all of these incidents, well, the majority of these incidents involve the volunteers there that are helping them out. And yet we very rarely hear of these volunteers speaking out against this. They seem to just be gluttons for punishment. They just seem to carry on with what they're doing, even though they're being attacked by these savages. They still go into work every day. I mean, I can only recall one of the people that worked at these refugee shelters speaking out against what's going on. I don't know if you've heard any of more than that, Lee, or just the one that I'm thinking of that was at the Daily Stormer.
I don't know. I mean, there is one event in Sweden where I guess some of these staff members, they actually had to hide inside of a room because they're being attacked by these savages. They're at this, I guess you call it an accommodation center, whatever you want to call it, a center for invaders. It doesn't really matter what you call it. The point is that they were physically attacking them because they refused to give them candy or some sort of sweets. And so they had to call the police to get them under control. I mean, it can't be any more obvious at this point when you see what's happening in Sweden, when you see what's happening in Germany, when you see what's happening all over Europe, that Western civilization is completely incompatible with Islam and all these other cultures that you see in Africa and the Middle East. There's a reason why we've been separate. This is the natural order of things. And really what we see from the Jews and all these creatures that control the media and the political systems, it's mostly Jews, but it's also traitors within our ranks. You see them waging a war on the natural order of things. And multiculturalism is really a war on the natural order of things. The only end result that's going to come out of this is going to be chaos, mayhem, and race war. And we're seeing that right now. It's just unbelievable.
No, there's no progress of civilization once you've got a multicultural situation. You've just got people at each other's throats. It's when we're left to our own devices that we produce our own culture. This is how we produce these various different European cultures over the last 2,000 years, has been because we've been separate from these other races. And where we've been separate from, they've got their own cultures as well. But if you try and mix the two together, we're just going to end up with war on the streets. And they're already saying that they have taken over. It's not like they're hiding what they're actually doing. That there was another demonstration again. This was in Britain. This was Britain First. Now they get criticized because they have said, oh, we stand solidly with the Jews because the Muslims are against the Jews. So there are some negative sides to them. But all the same, they still go out and protest against the invasion, and they do get a lot of publicity for this. Now, they walked through one of the occupied areas, one of the tribal occupied areas, which is Luton in Britain, and it's full of Muslims. They walked through there holding large white crosses up in the air as they walked through, and they were shouted at, they were spat at, and the Muslims were saying, it's our country, it's our country now. And the way that the media has reported on this, they said, oh well, this Muslim is quite right to say it's our country, because Britain First were being rude to them. But Britain First should be able to go anywhere in the country. We should be able to go anywhere in our own country. And we should be able to say that we're Christian anywhere in our own country. The whole country was built on Christian principles. It was once we became Christian that we united the kingdom to become a united kingdom. All of our laws go back to that. In fact, our very tolerance for the ways that other people think go back to Christianity, and that works fine when it's with white people, but when you've got other religions there, you can't be tolerant of them. You can't say, oh well, we're going to tolerate you having your different religion, if that different religion says, well, anybody that's not part of this is at war with us and is therefore lawful booty for us. And that's what Islam says. It says, if you don't submit to Islam, then you are at war with Islam. So anyone that is not a Muslim is an enemy.
Well, it's very interesting because, I mean, Islam, it's more than just a religion. It's also a philosophy that's used essentially to control all of these individuals, right? I mean, it's more than just a religious philosophy. And I think that's important to understand. And that's why when you see these creatures come in, they bring this philosophy with them, and you see them demanding Sharia law in the streets. And this is not compatible with the concepts in the West where you have things like freedom of religion. Freedom of religion, this concept, was meant for people of white European descent. And if you take a look at America, for example, the country was founded by men who were descended from white Europeans. And freedom of religion was not designed for some Muslims in the Middle East or somebody else. It was designed for people of white European descent. And I think that's an important distinction to understand when we talk about freedom of religion, because Islam does not tolerate any sort of freedom of religion. It's either Islam or nothing else. And as you said, Islam, it's a religion designed to get people to submit to its doctrine. There's no room for any leeway there. It is a totalitarian doctrine largely designed to control all of these Arabs that you've had in the Middle East. And so you can't have that doctrine in the West. It doesn't work. And that's why we've had conflicts and wars over the past hundreds and thousands of years. So they're incompatible.
Now, the freedom of conscience and the freedom of religion, that's saying, well, you're free to be a Protestant, or you're free to be a Catholic, or you're free to be a Lutheran. It was talking about the various different sects of Christianity. It wasn't saying, well, you're free to be a Muslim or a Satanist. The Muslims have all been our enemy since they first started. They declared that we were the enemy, we were the infidel. And they invaded these white areas in North Africa that were colonized by white people years and years ago, and Romans and the Vandals. And the Muslims invaded those areas. They invaded Ethiopia, Carthage, Tripoli, took them over, then became pirates, and then they then invaded parts of Europe. They would make they would pitch just off the shore. They would pitch anchor just off the shore at night, and then they would go ashore in their boats. They would snatch whatever they could, snatch women, snatch children, go back on the boats, and then they would take these women and children to the Middle East and then sell them. And over a million white slaves were taken like this. And as well as doing this, they would raid the ships that were going from Britain to America, or any of the ships that were traveling through the seas there, they would raid them. And these were the Barbary pirates. There was a fantastic comment on one of the recent podcasts talking all about this and how America, I forget which one it was, one of the early politicians in America was saying, look, we need to get a navy together to go after these Barbary pirates in Tripoli. If we don't, they are going to keep attacking us. And they did keep attacking us. And eventually, when we shut down slavery, we then had to go and shut down the Arabs' slavery as well. And they only made it illegal in Saudi Arabia in the 60s. Mauritania in North Africa, it was only made illegal in this now, the 21st century. Within the last decade or so, they made it illegal there. So it's always been based on slavery. It's always been based on anyone that's not a Muslim can be turned into a slave. They are just your property. They were encouraged to go to war. Jihad is the second most important thing in Islam, and there are various different ways of doing the jihad. It's all about fighting against the infidel and forcing him to submit. And when David Cameron says Islam is a religion of peace, it's not a religion of peace. The word itself does not mean peace. It means submit. So it means you submit to Islam, which means you submit to the Sharia law, you submit to the Ummah, which is like a huge multicultural state, all following Sharia law principles, with these caliphs at the top. And the different sects of Islam are basically arguing about who should be the caliph at the top. In Christianity, we had our Reformation. And again, we had what we were just talking about there, this freedom of religion. But they've never had that in Islam. They can't even agree to disagree among themselves. This is why ISIS go out attacking the Shiite Muslims. This is why you've got Sufi Muslims that are involved there, and they attack the Sufi Muslims as well. But the real Muslims are the ones that are involved in ISIS. They're the ones that are taking what Muhammad said literally and trying to emulate how Muhammad himself behaved. Muhammad, who married a 9-year-old child, had countless wives, had countless slaves. Muhammad, who would raid other caravans of traders, and that was how he made his living. And that was perfectly fine to do if the other traders weren't Muslims. So these are the essential laws of Islam, which are being played out now in our cities and in our lands. So we've got this group of people here who just see us as the enemy, and their religion perfectly legal for them to do exactly whatever they like to us. So how can we say freedom of religion? Yeah, you're fine to practice that. It all comes from projecting our own decent white moral character onto these other creatures, basically. And that's how we have to look at them. Right. Other creatures.
You can't possibly do that, because racially they're just dramatically different from the way we are, for a number of reasons. And you take a look at the Middle East now. I mean, you still have slavery all over the Middle East. A lot of these cities that have been built, they've essentially been built on the backs of slave labor. Saudi Arabia, they bring in these foreign workers from places like Africa, sometimes India, all these other places, and they abuse them and they treat them pretty much like slaves. There's very little difference. And then you mentioned the Islamic State. Well, slavery is legal there. They're trying to bring all that back. And then we're told by these traitor politicians that, hey, Islam is a religion of peace and it's great and you have to be tolerant of them. How can you be tolerant of this insane philosophy that they want to bring here? They are bringing a philosophy of intolerance, and we're told that you have to be tolerant of their philosophy of intolerance. Now, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But that's literally what these crazy people are trying to sell everybody in these white European countries. And sadly, a lot of these women just go along with it because they don't think logically about it. They think, well, yeah, we should treat these people like us and they're human beings and all this stuff. But they're different. They're fundamentally different racially. And this is something that people seem to just not understand for whatever reason.
Well, form and function are intimately tied together. If something has a different form to something else, then its function is going to be different. And they have a drastically different form to ourselves. They're different in color, different features, different body shape, different skeleton shape. So the logic tells you that their function is going to be different. They are going to function differently to us. And they do function differently to us. But it's not just that. It's the history. Our history of interaction with Islam has been covered up. It's been hidden. The reasons for going on the Crusades. We 400 years of Islamic jihad we had put up with by the time we finally went on a crusade to try and liberate some of these white countries that have been taken over by them. It took 400 years before we finally snapped. And we're taught today, oh, these crusades, they were terrible when we went over there on the crusades. The Ottomans, when the Ottomans took over a country, they took over Bulgaria, for instance. And what they did there, they said that every fifth child has to be given to us as a slave. And all the people that were there, if they didn't submit to Islam, they were used as slaves. So it was basically slavery for everybody. All the Bulgarians that were there were turned into slaves. And they had to give away their children to be taken to the Sultan for him to use as janissaries. Some of them would be castrated. Some of them would be sent out to fight. Some of them would even be sent back into Bulgaria to assassinate their own families once they had become an adult. And we are told, oh, this was Ottoman rule. They were our allies. It was Ottoman rule. Well, if that was rule, then how can you call the slavery system in America slavery? How can you call the humane treatment of the blacks in America that were housed, clothed, they weren't castrated, they were allowed to marry, they were fed, they weren't sent out to assassinate people, to go back to Africa and massacre their own families? So how can you call that slavery and call what the Ottomans did Ottoman rule?
It's important. Yeah, I think it's important to note that slavery, as we've been sold that as this concept, as it existed in the Americas or the United States, it really wasn't as horrible as we've been led to believe. There's been countless propaganda films from the Jewish Hollywood film studios about this, like 12 Years a Slave and numerous others, in which it depicts some crazy white slave master that's abusing all of his black slaves. And a lot of the slave masters treated their slaves very humanely, because it doesn't make any sense to destroy or maim your property that is helping you to do things with crops, to help with the cotton. I mean, it would be like taking your automobile and then for no reason whatsoever, just taking a sledgehammer to it. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, you're not going to destroy your own property or risk damaging your property in that fashion. So a lot of this treatment of black slaves, as I guess we can call it, has not been as horrible as we've been led to believe by the Jewish propaganda. I mean, what's been going on in the Middle East for centuries and beyond is far, far worse than what happened in colonial America and in the 18th and 19th century. It's just one of these historical fallacies that we've been sold by the Jewish propagandist.
And when you think about it, what the Mohammedans would do to these blacks, they would castrate them, and they castrated them because they knew that they were oversexed, and they were worried that if they didn't castrate them, that they might try it on with their women. So this is the way that the Muslims would treat another race that was coming into their country. They wouldn't wait for them to rush their women like the Muslims have done in Europe. They would castrate them before they even came into the country. So that's the way Islam deals with gang rape. It castrates the other races before they can have a chance to even gang rape them in their own country. And that's the way they deal with them. And the way we deal with them is to cover up their crimes, to give them these little comics telling them that they shouldn't grope women, as if they don't know that they shouldn't be doing that. And their leaders, their Muslim leaders, have the cheek to say, well, you should ban alcohol in Germany. This is just going to go on until you ban alcohol. So they're basically,
yeah, when beer is like one of the hallmarks of German society, it has been for, yeah, I don't know how long. I mean, you got the Oktoberfest over there. Okay, why don't you shut down the Oktoberfest and give Germany to the Muslims? I mean, that's literally what these traders are calling for. It's completely insane. I mean, we have to purge these animals from Europe immediately. Otherwise, there's going to be some major, major problems. And I'm not just saying like in the next 10 years. I'm saying like in the next two or three. We're already seeing it. I mean, it's only going to get worse if they keep allowing these creatures in. I mean, hopefully some sanity will prevail and we'll start seeing some nationalist parties actually get some political power and we can repel this invasion because some drastic action has to be taken.
Well, there's another bit of positive news this week. It's to do with Geert Wilders and his Europe of Nations and Freedom. And again, Geert Wilders, he's suspiciously pro-Israel in places, but at least he is anti-immigration. He's got a group together which is made up of the Front National, his group, the PVV, Lega Nord, FPO, VB, KNP, and Janice Atkinson from the UKIP. But they've been given €3 million a year they're going to receive now, and €17.5 million over the next 4 years to help with whatever it is they're doing. And they've released, they've had a conference this week, and they've released five principles. And I'll just read these principles out because they're, you know, they're pretty good. And these are the only politicians that are actually saying this. They got one. We want to close our borders for mass immigration from Islamic countries and the asylum tsunami. Two, we must protect ourselves against the terrorist threat. We do not want jihadis in our countries, and we must restore the safety of our citizens, especially our women. No more rape, no more sexual jihad. On New Year's Eve in Cologne alone, over 1,000 women were assaulted and groped and raped. So far, only 30 suspects have been caught, all of them North Africans, and half of those asylum seekers. This is unacceptable. Closing our borders is a major step towards more safety too. Three, we do not want billions of taxpayers' money to be spent on Brussels, bailouts and asylum seekers. We want that money to be spent on our people in our own country. Four, we choose national sovereignty instead of the EU. Capital of the Netherlands is Amsterdam, not Brussels. We will regain national sovereignty and get rid of the unelected European bureaucrats. And five, we want to stop the Islamization of our free societies. We choose freedom and we will not compromise anymore. So I think those five principles are pretty good. And all the media calls them far right, but I don't think they're really that far right. But all of these it's groups have agreed. Yeah. Well, they've all agreed to this.
Yeah. I mean, how is it far right to not want your country invaded by a bunch of subhuman savages? I mean, how has that become far right? Yeah, you know, what so mainstream is allowing your women to be raped and to have these savages running around killing people? Is that apparently the mainstream when that's considered far right? You gotta love these terms that they throw out there, like far right, neo-Nazi, white supremacist. But I mean, they've used these terms so much, I don't think they really matter anymore because they've lost their meaning. They've just used it for years and years and years. And I think it's starting to lose its effect, which is good. But overall, I think those principles are a good start. Of course, I mean, after we repel this invasion of savages, we got to deal with the Jews. I think that's, of course, a major problem. I mean, these are some very subversive groups of people that have done some severe damage to Western civilization because they're the ones that are largely financing this whole thing. George Soros being one of the most well-known perpetrators of this. I still can't believe he hasn't been arrested, but, of course his people have so much influence. That's largely why, but, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good step in the right direction and, hopefully we'll see some nationalist groups begin to take some real political power over the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at Geert Wilders, who was the one that's heading that, there was a recent poll taken this week as well, and the poll suggested that he would win 42 seats in Parliament, and the VVD coalition that's actually in power now, they would only win 27 seats. So in the next election, you could well see Geert Wilders win. And what that made me think of looking at those principles was they are pretty much what Donald Trump is saying. And what we've got here is a European coalition of these groups that have been voted into the European Union Parliament, but which don't really have that much power in their own parliaments. And they're saying this. But over there, you've got a mainstream politician, the main front runner for the Republican Party, that is saying pretty much similar to these principles and saying, you know, if he got into power, then these groups could work with him. Because they're going along with what he's saying. I believe you've got some news about what's happening with Trump and the Iowa caucus over there. Is that right, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, I can go over a little bit as to what's happening over here in the United States. Tomorrow we have the Iowa caucus, which is the beginning of the primary season of the election. And it looks like Trump has been leading in the polls. I think the last poll had him at like 28%. And then you got Ted Cruz running at like 23%. It's hard to believe that he has all that support. But Iowa's kind of a strange state because you have these evangelicals. So typically they vote a little bit differently. But overall, it seems like the momentum is really on Trump's side. And I think largely it's because he's been the one person that has been speaking out strongest against this invasion. I mean, he's come out and said that he'd ban Muslims from entering the country, which I think is a very good thing. He talks about building a wall, which I think is needed because you can't have these mestizos from Central America continuing to hop over the border and dump kids in the United States. And all of a sudden we have to take care of them for how many years? The whole thing is crazy. But yeah, it seems like Trump is in a really good position to take the Iowa caucus or the caucuses. And if he does that, it looks like he could run the table with the other states. Where I live in New Hampshire, he has a huge lead in the polls. So there's a very good chance that he could win the nomination. And it's going to be a very interesting next couple of months. But it looks like the American people have finally had it with the establishment. And they're turning to a guy like Trump, who, again, he's self-funding his campaign. So the chances of him doing something positive for the people is far greater than all these other clowns like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, who are backed by Jewish billionaires or Jewish bankers. So, I mean, even though Trump does say positive things about Israel, which I obviously don't like and I disagree with, I think the fact that he's at least talking about stopping this illegal alien invasion and banning Muslims from the country, I think is a really good thing. So it's going to be very interesting what happens over the next few months, that's for sure.
Well, that's the main threat that people see, isn't it? The main threat that people see is the invasion. They don't see who it is behind the invasion. They don't see that it's the Jews that are calling for it, that it's the Jews that are sponsoring it. They just see the actual weapon that is being used against them. So this is why I think it's better to concentrate on that for the time being, because that's what is winning people around to our side. It's Trump saying, you stop the Muslims, build the wall, that has got people to support him. If he was to come out and say that he was against the Jews, I don't think he'd have got the amount of support that he has got. And where you're saying there about these anchor babies, this is the next thing that they're hitting Europe with. They're saying that this next wave of refugees, quote unquote refugees, they're all supposedly under 18. They're all these kids. And of course, so they're sort of tugging at the heartstrings and trying with the emotional blackmail, saying we've got to allow these kids in, think of the poor children, they've lost their families, all this la-di-da. But the thing is, once one of those sets foot on British soil, then they are classed as a ward of the state, and they are entitled to absolutely every single thing that a white British child would be entitled to if he was an orphan. Just because they're under 18. So they're entitled to school. They're entitled to go. They don't have to go to a refugee center. They get sent to a proper care home with all the facilities and everything that the white children get. So of course, these kids are going to be trying to break into Britain. They're going to be trying to break into Europe because they're entitled to even more than the adult refugees are entitled to. So this is a really serious thing. So it's great that Trump is speaking out about the equivalent of this in America, because there's nobody speaking out about that in Europe.
Yeah, I think overall it's good. Well, of course, a lot of these people coming into Europe, these invaders, a lot of them who claim they're like 15 or 16 or whatever, they're actually in their 20s or 30s. It's just completely insane what's happening. But yeah, I mean, I think overall Trump's campaign has been positive, regardless of if you disagree with certain things he says about Israel or whatnot. I think the main thing that he's done is that he's tearing down all of these notions that have existed in politics about political correctness. I think that's really the most important thing that he has done, is that he is destroying political correctness. And as a result of that, people are now able to speak out about these issues much more freely than ever before. I mean, you take a look at some of these comment sections that have to deal with the illegal aliens and what's happening over in Europe. And I would say at least over 90% of the comments consistently are on our side. I mean, it looks like something that you would see posted on my site or the Daily Stormer. I think the Trump campaign has definitely been a positive, and it looks like he's going to be around for a while, because it seems like every state that he's running in, he's leading by huge numbers, Iowa being the only exception. But I mean, the other states, he's got huge numbers on his side. And again, I think there's a good chance that he might actually win the nomination if this continues. So it's definitely some positive steps in the right direction, to say the least.
Yeah, and everyone that is in a position to vote for him should vote for him. But I think, as you say, that's the important thing that he's done, is he's disarmed the opposition with their weapons. I mean, their main weapons are their magic words that they call us. And those words just aren't working anymore. You get called a racist and people are starting to question just what that actually means, and why it is only white people that get called it, and why people get called that just because they want to secure their borders, just because they want to protect their own people. They want to see their money spent on their own people. They don't want to see it being spent on foreigners. So if that makes me a racist, then I'm a racist. That's the way people are starting to think now. And I think you could see some of this in to go back to what we were saying at the beginning, in this National Action demonstration. I mean, they were blatantly saying Hitler was right. All of these foreigners have to go. And it was just people from all over that were there in the city centre, and they were really cheering, especially the young people. And I think the young people are more likely to come over to our side than anyone else, especially the ones that haven't been into the college and haven't been into the brainwashing. I mean, some of them may have gone to college and they may have been absolutely repulsed by what they were being taught, and they may have thought, well, this is just so anti-white and anti-male, I've got to move to the far right. But a lot of the Antifas seem to be of that age, so maybe it's not that many. But out of the young people there in the city centre that day, all of them were cheering. And apparently they gave out lots of leaflets. They had lots of people asking about them, lots of interest about the group themselves, and hopefully they'll get more support from this. But I see that as being one of the main things that Trump has achieved, is to disarm the enemy so that the trigger words don't work anymore. And also, it's given where he's talked about this in public conversation, it means we can now talk about it in public conversation. We can say, well, the Muslims should be banned from coming into Europe or banned from coming into America. There should be a wall. And we can say that. Whereas before, if you said that, you might have got the group there being all shocked and accusing you of being a racist. But they can't really do that now, because it's mainstream thinking. It's a mainstream politician that is saying that. And you're so lucky over there, I think, to have him saying this. Because, as I say, the only thing we've got close to it over here are the minor league politicians. And he's a major league one. So I just hoping and praying that he really does get in. I think things are really positive. It's a shame that things have to get so bad before they get better. It's a shame that we have to have hundreds of women attacked and raped in Cologne before people start actually saying, well, hang on a minute, maybe we shouldn't be allowing all these refugees in. It's a shame that it has to get that bad. But sometimes it does have to get bad before it gets worse. And I think this is going to be a really good year for nationalism. I think more and more people are going to come to our side, basically. And especially when they see the way that these things are reported in the media, when they see this report of this demonstration in Dover, and they see a picture of a, this is in a mainstream newspaper, there's a picture of a young white man with blood on his face, and the caption underneath it is something like, how wonderful it is to see fascists with blood all over their faces. And anybody...
Yeah, totally biased reporting. Right.
Yeah. Anybody...
I mean, the reporting is just so ridiculous at this point. I mean, these Jew-run media outfits and these mainstream newspapers, I mean, they've lost so much credibility. I mean, the fact that somebody like myself or somebody like you and somebody like Andre, I mean, just two or three of us can have such an impact as far as reaching out to people and getting traffic, I think says it all about the state of the media today. I mean, the Daily Stormer gets millions of people visiting. I mean, I get in the six figures as far as visitors, and I'm just running this thing part time. It shows that if you use the internet properly, you can really reach a substantial number of people. And I think the fact that we've been using some fairly, I guess you call it extreme rhetoric, I think that's been very helpful in allowing people to promote this message in all sorts of venues. And it's been a really good step in the right direction for what should be happening. That's the promotion of nationalism and destroying all this multicultural nonsense. But I think we've done a really good number on the media. And the Jewish media, they're just going to continue to lose more and more credibility. I think one of the things that happened recently that was important was the stuff over at the National Review. I mean, here's a magazine that's been around for a long time. It's got all these idiot Jew neocon editors and writers and all these individuals have been in the establishment or the conservative, quote unquote, conservative establishment for such a long period of time. And I mean, they have no credibility now. They came out against Trump whining about what Trump was doing, and nobody takes them seriously anymore. So I think we're doing a really good job at disarming and destroying the media establishment, which is huge for us.
Well, I know when Daily Stormer first got mentioned in the Daily Mail, and there was a picture of the front page, I know the viewing figures just jumped. Loads of people suddenly found the site, and then they would have found it really funny, and the humour in it is excellent. And that sort of humour we miss. That's our natural sense of humour, is joking about other races and other peoples. We do it among ourselves. You know, in Britain, we always have these jokes, an Englishman, an Irishman, and a Scotsman walked into the pub. That is our natural humour as white people. It's having a little joke about the differences between ourselves and having a little joke about the differences between these other races. And that's been taken away from us. And it's a natural part of our character to do that. So I think when people see that again on sites like the Daily Stormer, like InfoStormer and others, then they become attracted to it. And as you say, it's the extremism in those sites, the extreme language that causes them to get publicized on the Jewish mainstream media sites, because they're so shocked and horrified at seeing a Hitler salute or whatever, they put it in there, they report on it, yeah, and that brings more people to our side.
Absolutely. Well, it wasn't Glenn Beck was crying about some article that Andre posted and how he hurt Mark Levin's feelings. Who, anybody who doesn't know who Mark Levin is, he's this Jewish conservative talk radio personality over here in the States. He's just an irritating individual. If you listen to his shows, you know what I mean. He calls himself the Great One, probably because he's insecure about himself. Just a horrible human being. And Andre pretty much tore him apart in the article. And Glenn Beck had to go to Facebook to cry about it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And that shows you the impact that we're having, because I mean, you got Glenn Beck, who's a fairly well-known media personality over here. He's been on Fox News, and he's whining about the Daily Stormer hurting Mark Levin's feelings. I mean, that right there says it all about how effective this material is. And I have a feeling we're going to have more victories moving forward.
It's highlighting the fact that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And these people that are writing this stuff, that their feelings are so hurt, they have to put it on mainstream television about how terrible it is. And they don't realize, you know, how ridiculous they look. You know, their hubris and vanity is so great that they think that the rest of the public are going to be shocked and horrified that somebody said a naughty word as well. But we're not. But these words are just losing their strength. They're losing their power. And just take a word like packy, for instance. And we're taught in England and in Europe that to use the word packy is wrong. And yet packy is the name of the biggest selling magazine in Pakistan. It's called, you know, it's just called packy. These words, these words have just been put out there specifically to be used to punish white people. And the only reason why these other races say they get offended by them is because they get rewarded for saying they are offended by them. They don't really understand why they're supposed to be offended. They just know that they are supposed to be offended. And if they say that, they'll get their old job back or they'll get a load of money from suing somebody for saying it. And these reporters that then complain about anti-Semitism or being against Negroes or whatever, it really is just whining about criticism. And the politicians are the worst ones for it. They really are the worst, because if you're a politician, you should expect to get criticized. And yet if you're a politician and you're a member of one of these minorities, then they think they've got a license to call for the person criticizing them to be locked up. And the more that gets publicized, the more people come to our side as well, because that just makes them look so weak and pathetic. They can't handle words.
It makes him look so dumb. I mean, Glenn Beck in his Facebook post, I mean, he sounded like a whiny woman. He didn't sound like a man. He sounded like a little girl. So it just makes them look stupid when they cry about these stupid things. Oh, somebody called me a mean name. Well, just grow up and be a man, for God's sakes. I tell you what, I mean, in your parliament, you got some interesting characters over there. I think there was an MP over there by the name of Stella Creasy. I'm pretty sure she was the one, or at least her supporters, who got me banned from Twitter. Because I sent her a Twitter post about the Holocaust being a hoax, and she got really upset about that, then posted my tweet to her followers and got a bunch of nasty grams and all sorts of things. And shortly after, I was banned from Twitter. But man, you got some interesting characters in your parliament. Hopefully you can get rid of those people and replace them with some sane British nationalist at some point.
Well, this is the thing. You're lucky she wasn't calling for you to go to prison. If you'd have been in Britain, they'd have been trying to track you down and have the police around for sending a tweet. Just for sending a tweet. That's the way they behaved. I mean, look at what happened with this Luciana Berger thing. I mean, she arranged to have meetings with all the head directors of Twitter to get them to completely reorganize the whole of Twitter to save her hurt feelings. And she thought the public were behind her on this. She thought people were going to be supporting her on this. You know, this is how out of touch these people are. And I seriously, as a child, I was taught that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So what if somebody calls you a rude name? That's absolutely pathetic. You know, don't make a fuss about it. And yet these other races, these minorities, they're being taught, well, this is the worst thing ever. If you get called a rude name, you get called a terrible name. Oh, that's it. Suicidal. That person who called you that name should be locked up for years. And it's completely the opposite of what our actual values are. I mean, we're being taught here in Britain we need to be promoting British values. And these British values are supposed to be toleration for wickedness and evil. We're supposed to be tolerant of that. We're supposed to think democracy is good. And what they mean by that is importing other races and giving them the vote instead of making it just for us. Promoting women instead of men to jobs that they shouldn't be doing. All these sort of things they're saying are British values, but no, they're not British values. British values are not as maintaining a stiff upper lip and not giving a damn what names people are calling you. And you've got that Rudyard Kipling poem, you know, you'll be a man if you can put up with this, that and the other and not get swayed by what other people say. That's British values, that's character building. And yet what we're promoting now is anti-British. It's anti-British to say you should lock people up for saying words that might hurt other people's feelings. Because what it boils down to is speaking the truth. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing on here. And that's what's being done on your site and on Andre's site, is speaking the truth. And the truth does hurt. If it wasn't the truth, it wouldn't hurt. And that's what they want. They just want people to be lying all the time because the lies won't hurt anybody's feelings. Well, truth does hurt.
Yeah. It's interesting. All this hate speech crap and our nonsense. I think it's starting to backfire on even the social media sites, because if you look at what's happened with Twitter, they lost a number of their top executives. They just quit all of a sudden, their stock price in the toilet. And it's no wonder why. I mean, they're banning people from their site because they express a point of view that they might not agree with. Yet they sell themselves as this website that allows people to talk about all sorts of things freely, and it's social media and look how wonderful it is. But meanwhile, they're using these underhanded tactics to ban people like myself. I was on there for 3 weeks before I got banned, and they said that I was like being abusive. They said that I was participating in targeted abuse, whatever that means. When the people that were sending me stuff, the stuff they were sending was far more vile than anything I mentioned. I was just saying facts about things like the Holocaust being a hoax and other things along those lines. And, well, it just shows you that these social media sites, if they continue going down this road, Facebook's doing the same thing. They said they're going to be banning private gun sales on their site. And of course, Facebook is totally run by Jews, like you got Mark Zuckerberg, Sheryl Sandberg, both Jews running that operation. But if they keep doing this, their sites are going to be irrelevant. And I think we've really hit peak social media, because the more they clamp down on the free flow of speech and being dishonest about the fact that they're doing it, I think you're going to see less and less people actually participating on these sites, and they're going to lose the power that they once had.
Well, it's good to hear that the directors are leaving. It shows that they have got some integrity. Even if they probably don't like what's being said, but the right to actually say it is more important than that, is the right for people to actually say how they feel, to actually give their opinions. And it's not like people are inciting people to violence. It's not like people are saying, go out and kill someone or go out and attack someone. People are just bringing up facts and figures that certain minority groups find uncomfortable. And they have to be brought up in order for our group to protect ourselves from these minority groups. It's like homosexuals. We have to bring up the fact that homosexuals prey, a large portion of homosexuals prey on underage boys. Very large proportion of homosexuals were created by just being molested when they were kids themselves. That's how homosexuals are created, through molestation. But this all has to be covered up. The fact that homosexuals die at a young age, they use lots of drugs, have multiple partners, it's suicidal, are very shallow. All these are provable facts from statistics and psychological analysis of them. They're all provable. And yet we're not supposed to say them because it might hurt their feelings. But these sort of things need to be said so that young boys and young men can protect themselves from these predators. And it's the same with the rape statistics.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how it was in Britain, but over here in the States, if you go back to the 1950s and even the 1960s, homosexuality was treated as a mental illness. It's because it is a mental illness. I mean, it's not natural for an armed man to be attracted to an armed man. And plus, of course, the things that you mentioned, I think are also very important. But yeah, I mean, the homosexuality and all this transgender garbage, these are mentally ill people. Yeah, we have the Jewish media constantly promoting this crap like it's normal. You got Ellen Page now coming out with this ridiculous faggot propaganda film of some kind. She starred in that movie Juno back in the 1990s, a Jew-produced film that promotes all sorts of weird crap. You can look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about. But yes, I mean, homosexuality, it's a mental illness. Yet the Jews and the media and the film industry are promoting it like it's normal. And it's creating all sorts of societal problems. I mean, this is another aspect that we have to deal with at some point, because, I mean, this is just, this is not good. if you're promoting homosexuality as being normal and teaching children that these homosexuals are fine, you can be around them. It's not. It's a real problem, and it's another thing that has to be dealt with. But unfortunately, we got all this stuff with gay marriage and all this other nonsense that's happening. And hopefully we can reverse the direction of this at some point. I'm hoping soon.
Well, it's fundamentally against the natural order of things. It's not just not just those statistics. I mean, just looking at the statistics of the amount of black and white rape there is, the amount of rape that there is in North Africa, and the crimes that these migrants are committing against white people. So this is why they're trying to cover them up, because they know it's the truth. They try to legislate against us speaking the truth. We have to speak the truth, because eventually the truth conquers all. And we are on the side of truth. We're on the side of what's right. We're doing the right thing. We're honourable people. We place honour and truth as these high ideals that we wish to stick to. And that, if that's hatred, then call it hatred if you want. But I'm not going to change. I'm not going to start lying just because I'm told that it's hateful to say the things that I do. Because speaking the truth is the natural position. It's unnatural to lie, and it's natural to speak the truth. See, there's no word to truth. There's only a word to lie. So speaking the truth is natural. Lying is unnatural. And I have to credit Simon Shepherd for that. But yeah, I think so long as we stick to telling the truth, then we're guaranteed to win, because the truth does conquer all. Well, we're coming up to the end of the hour now, Lee. I don't know if you want to add anything here at the end of the podcast before we sign off.
No, I think we covered most of the major things that are happening. I think things are moving, at least in some realms, in the right direction. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here with the elections in the United States. And we'll see how everything unfolds over in Europe over the next year or so. But hopefully we'll see a big nationalist revival over there and over here in the United States. And we can finally restore some sanity to our nations. It's long overdue at this point.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the way it's all heading. We're going to see more people coming to our side. I've got a really good feeling about that. Okay, well, thanks for being on, Lee, and thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all again next time.